You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Mark, what's going on in the stock markets right now?
Well, new highs today in the S&P, and we're getting some nice breakout action in the Russell 2000. Hasn't made a new high yet, but a new relative high. The Treasury bonds were rallying a little bit today, so the bond market is providing a little more encouragement here about lower interest rates, regardless of what the Fed, Jay Powell, may do the third week of September or not. And you know, that's pretty much it. So the market had a nice rally today. Not every stock participated, obviously, but the S&P, which measures 500 stocks, did go to a new high. And as I mentioned, the Russell did well. And some of the high-tech Magnificent 7 stocks also did okay. Not as broadly based as the S&P, of course. But tomorrow, the street, you know, is waiting for economic reports. Tomorrow, the I think it's the PC index is due tomorrow morning, and the Chicago PMI index is also due. Without getting into all the details about it, the one that I like to look at more is the Chicago PMI reading, which is really it's a broad indicator, but it's industry generated. It's not a government related index, which I like. You know, I don't trust the government numbers. They haven't been running generally. If the reading is over 50, it's positive. Below that, it's negative, and it has been negative the last few months, indicating a bit of slowing, which I sort of encourages the Fed to lower rates. So let's see what it comes in tomorrow, if it's strong or weak. And then before that, in the morning, the other index comes out, which is the PCE number. It's called the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, which measures inflation. So I guess the street's going to be looking to see what that says. You know, obviously the street wants things to show that inflation has slowed down or jobs are slowing down, and to give more ammunition to the Fed. You know, and I'm, as you know, I don't care so much what the Fed does. I care more what the free market does, and that's the bond market and the stock market. And the stock market's been telling you things are getting better. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been going to new highs, regardless of all the negative press that you might have heard elsewhere. So we've been long the indexes, and I still think we got a ways to go. You know, the only bugaboo out there, to summarize, is that generally this is a time frame. You know, when you run into September, October, you know, things can get dicey, and then everything seems to be okay. But, you know, out of the blue, suddenly there's some catastrophic event. You know, you can name what it is, whether it's geocosmic, whether it's geopolitical, whether it's just some surprise, a black swan event suddenly hits that nobody anticipates, and we've had a few of those over the years. So markets are in the new highs, and you're in the historically seasonally negative period, September, October. Maybe this year it won't be the case, but you got to be sort of prepared that it could happen, because cycles, you know, tend to manifest in, you know, one form or another correctly. So we've got the autumnal equinox, September 21st to 23rd, that time frame, which by coincidence is the same time frame the Fed's supposed to decide whether it's going to lower rates or not. And, you know, you just got to be aware of the time frame. And I guess if you're long term, you don't really pay much attention to this stuff. But, you know, I'm more shorter term and try to focus on potential things that could happen. So, you know, maybe the market continues to go up, explodes, continues to go to new highs. Everything looks great, and it tops out in September and then has a correction. I mean, maybe it'll be just the opposite of everybody think. Instead of you're going down and then up, it goes up and then corrects later. So we just have to sort of take it a day at a time, but that's sort of a short-term picture of what's happening.
Now, According to Business Television, the U.S. economy grew 3.3% in the second quarter, opposed to a 1.2%, I believe, decline in the first quarter. Does that mean things are bright and rosy now in America?
Well, you know, I pay more attention to the market than to the to those reports because, you know, we over the years I find that many of them are falsified or exaggerated or politically motivated. You let the market tell you the story. I mean, why would the S&P be at new all-time highs today if things were so bad? You know what I mean? We've been climbing a wall of worry, as Joe Granville used to say decades ago, worrying about what the Feds are going to do or not do, what's going on with Ukraine and Putin and Trump, and what's going on with China and the tariff negotiations, and what's still going on in Israel with Gaza, with Hamas, and you know, we can just run down the whole list here. So the tape is telling you everything is okay, and I'm just going to stay with it until it says otherwise. And we, technically, you get a reversal pattern, you get some clear sign that it's going to change, and it hasn't done that yet. Maybe it'll change Monday morning, you know. But before a big market crashes, and I've been around since the 1970s, you know, I've done this for a long time. In fact, I actually sort of predicted the crash back in 1987. I had a model that said, watch out for October, and we published it in January. So as a general rule, you know, I'm not caught by any great surprise. I mean, the tape sort of tells you before the October crash in 87, you had an early October sell-off, and it provided some significant sell signals, and 3 weeks later, the big crash came. So things just don't reverse overnight. You know, like you could say, well, an atomic bomb dropped or someone got assassinated or something, you know, terrible happened overnight that suddenly reversed everything. But as a general rule, the tape sort of anticipates and cycles anticipate stuff. So long and short is I'm staying positive.
What's going on with gold?
Doing great. The gold shares are doing better. But gold itself is hanging in there near, you know, near relative highs. Silver has been sort of hanging in there near relative highs. And the big name gold stocks like Newmont Mining or Agnico Eagle, the big Canadian name, at you know, I guess new all-time or recovery highs. And the indexes like GDX and GDXJ doing well. You know, a lot of reasons why that's going to happen, you know, and it's going to continue to be positive. You know, the producers are making money. The shares are way behind the underlying metal. I mean, there's some analysis that I've studied that says you could see a triple in the price of some of these gold shares in the next 3 to 5 years. So, it's a good place to keep your money and, hang in there.
What's happening with Bitcoin?
Had a little bit of a shakeout the last few days, but I'm not too concerned about it. It's dropped down to just under 109,000. It was 123 in the couple of weeks just prior to that. And I think a lot of things are going to be coming down the pike here in terms of government involvement and also institutional investment in the crypto space, which is still yet to come. It's very, you know, a very small amount of institutional investment and allocation in the crypto market, but all the research that I'm reading suggests that it has barely started. So that means a lot of the cryptos are going to be doing well. You got all the government legislation now behind it, and the reserve that the government is setting up for both crypto and for Bitcoin. This is serious stuff. I mean, it's legislation now behind this. This is not just, what is Bitcoin and what is, what are these cryptos and so forth and so on. And what do they mean? I mean, we're talking about stable coins being created under the Stable Coin Act and some big U.S. retailers like Walmart and others creating these stable coins, which means they're backed by Treasury and they're solid in nature and become an ultimate way of transacting business. But Bitcoin itself, next big target is about 126,000 and there's 146,000 and you sort of take it from there. I mean, come up with numbers all the way to 1 million over the next few years in Bitcoin. my biggest concern, and we had this in an interview, if you remember, a few weeks ago, is will technology advance with, you know, with supercomputing and quantum computing to such a degree in the next few years that someone breaks the code on Bitcoin? No one has been able to do that yet. And if some computer genius or advanced computer power suddenly does that, it could really mess up Bitcoin. And it doesn't mean all cryptos go to hell, but it certainly would be destructive to Bitcoin itself if somebody broke the code on it and start playing around with it. That would mess that whole Bitcoin scenario up. So that's sort of your downside risk, is that somebody, now there's other cryptos out there, most notably a very popular name, XRP, which doesn't have that risk. So it's just the nature of Bitcoin itself that I suppose that's the risk for Bitcoin if and when that happens. And that's just speculation on my part. But outside of that, the trend's up, and it looks okay to me at the moment. Sure.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on in the crude oil market?
It's been upticking here a little bit. I'm still more on the bear side, notwithstanding, you know, the risks of some geopolitical events and Strait of Hormuz type closure and all that type of stuff. The basic technical analysis said to me earlier this year it was going to go down, and I had that 55 target and then maybe even a 45 target, and then it rallied, and now it's sort of just chopping around. I still have that unfulfilled target to the downside in the 40s, and I'm happier when crude goes down. It's a tax on consumers. The lower it goes, the more bullish it is for the market and the economy. So I'm hoping that crude oil does resume a downtrend. If some event happens, you know, that we can't foresee overnight, it could change the price. This has been the story for crude oil for decades. So it's like anything else. But the chart in recent days has been showing a little life to it, but I'm actually in my newsletter, I actually have an inverse ETF on crude oil. In other words, betting on lower prices. So I'm sort of keeping that as a core position.
What's happening in the uranium market?
Uranium has done terrific. It's more the uranium shares, but Cameco, you know, the big name, CCJ, Canadian name, has been doing fabulously. It had a bit of a correction, and then it just took off again and is flirting with recent highs. So but the uranium or the nuclear, when you say uranium, I'm paraphrasing that or extending that to the whole energy sector, the nuclear sector, all over the place. Constellation Energy, GE, Vinova, the company that makes many of the big reactors. All these stocks in recent days have been upticking really nicely. Some of the more speculative names like Oklo, OKLO, I believe made a new high within the past week. These are for the small SMR reactors, they call them, which have yet to be produced. So when you say uranium, I'm sort of throwing it all together. But then you have some uranium stocks out there that are also overlap a bit into the rare earths and other metal business. So some of the small names out there like UUUU and UEC, these are speculative names, but have been doing well partially because of uranium, but partially because they also have interest in other metals, you know, that are important to the rare earth argument. So whole group still strong, Jim, you know, a lot of money behind it. The only question is, is there too much anticipation in it or not? And that's the question the market will ultimately answer by correcting. But the demand for computing power and the money that's been put into like the Three Mile Island project that Microsoft put money into is yet to, I forgot the name for it. It used to be called Three Mile Island. They call it something new now, the same entity. They just renamed it. Still going to be, I believe, a couple of years until that's up and running. So plenty of time to see how it all plays out, but a lot of money and resources are going into it, and the stocks are anticipating.
Is there anything of interest in the cannabis market?
Well, funny you should mention that. The cannabis stocks have been hot. In fact, the ticker symbol MSOS, which is the U.S.-based non-Canadian, U.S.-based cannabis stocks, hit a new little recovery high today at $6. It was like 2.5 within the last 60 days. So the whole cannabis group has been upticking. In fact, every night I've been putting in the newsletter list of some of the active cannabis stocks. And, you know, we should have laughed about this. You know, the industry sort of went to hell, but suddenly Trump came out with a comment that, you know, we should try to encourage the rescheduling of cannabis from schedule one down to three. And the DEA has to approve that, and it goes through a whole process. And that's only part of the puzzle, but it's been enough to get some momentum going back into the stocks, and there's been some spectacular moves. Tilray, I think we talked about this the last few weeks, was originally a Canadian company. If you remember, it went public, and I'm probably going back 8 or 9 years now, but, you know, went public at a few bucks a share, and one day rallied up to $250 a share, and then the whole Canadian, you know, cannabis industry sort of went into a huge correction, as it did here in the U.S. for a number of years. So the stock got down to as low as 35 cents, believe it or not, within the last 6 months. And within the last 60 days, it's rallied from 35 cents up to $1.40, $1.50. So we had mentioned that in our newsletter. So that was a pretty significant 400-500% gain in a stock in a relatively short period of time, within just a matter of a couple months. So there has been some action, and so take a look at them. You know, there seems to be momentum there. Of course, they've already had a little bit of a pop, but I guess the anticipation that the rescheduling is going to happen, and that's going to help the industry, is part of the rally. We can spend a lot of time talking about it. It's only part of the problem. Rescheduling the cannabis doesn't change the banking laws, which still have to be changed and updated. So there's still a lot of confusion about that, but I guess if Donald Trump is behind it and sort of encouraged that the rescheduling occur, maybe he can push Congress into getting the Banking Act passed so that it's legal in terms of the way the IRS, Internal Revenue Service, looks at cannabis, which at the present, since it's federally illegal, doesn't do the businesses a lot of good when they're filing their tax returns. So that's another part of the puzzle that has to be straightened out. So we'll see how it all plays out, but it looks like they've hit a bottom, and they're trying to stage a more meaningful rally.
Anything on the geocosmic front we should be keeping a close eye on? I see Elon Musk's giant rocket after its 10th test was finally successful.
Well, fortunately, I'm happy that happened. I pay attention to the geocosmic and the solar activity because that affects some of Elon's satellites. But in terms of geocosmics, we do have something brewing here. We have a big sunspot alert being flashed now at spaceweather.com. And apparently there's in the sun's southern atmosphere, there's a large sunspot turning toward the Earth. And they call it they label it number 4197. And it's funny, in the discussion of it, they actually say it's about one-third of the size of the Carrington sunspot. And we talked about this Carrington sunspot on this broadcast for the last few years, which is, remember, the huge event back in 1860 or 1857. I forgot the exact date, but they actually, in the commentary coming out from the scientists, they actually call it a one-third Carrington sunspot. So I guess at least it's not the Carrington size, but that was a huge solar event. So it's turning toward the Earth now, and we'll see what, you know, effect it has. They say actually it's so big some photographers can actually photograph it if you have the proper filters on your camera shooting at the sun. So nobody really talks about this stuff. It's really fascinating. I mean, that's why I got into it. I mean, we find out that these large solar spots on the sun, if they face the Earth and they're big enough, they can cause a lot of destruction here on our planet. And it's not something sneeze at it all. I mean, I'm glad there. It's like watching for asteroids or anything else that's out there. It's something you got to be aware of. So it's good to know that whether this will have any impact or not. But I thought it was more amazing that they actually compared it to the Carrington in terms of size. I think this is going to be a standard now. They're going to start saying, well, this is equivalent to or less than the Carrington type of sunspot. So it's sort of funny. I just, in the last few years, I got into this. It's just sort of fun tracking this stuff. So on the cyclical pattern, we've got the autumnal equinox, the third week of September. I already mentioned too, and I think September 7th, we've got a new moon and a full moon coming up, that is. And I just want to mention, I think we mentioned in last week's or on the weekend broadcast a week ago, Friday, this past Friday, the day that Jay Powell came out with his Jackson Hole speech was a day, and that was also the day, if you recall, the stock market exploded, the U.S. stock market exploded up 800, 900 points. It was the day of the new moon. So it was perfectly coincident that day, on the day of the new moon, that you had that explosive rally and you had the Jackson Hole event occur. So those who may laugh at tracking these lunar cycles and knowing that certain things could happen on and about those dates, it's wise to open up your perception a little bit and take that into your consideration. So anyway, that's sort of what's new in the geocosmic that I see as of today. So we'll watch into early September. We have that September 5th economic report, labor report that everybody is holding their breath for. As I mentioned a few moments ago, we got a couple tomorrow, Friday morning, the PCE and the Chicago PMI index. But the big one that everybody is sort of holding their breath for is the September 5th report. And that's the, what they call it, it's the actual name of the report. I'm trying to remember the actual name of the report. The Bureau of Labor Statistics report that comes out on September 5th. And apparently that's sort of be the key in terms of whether the Fed lowers or raises rates or not. In other words, if report comes in too strong and employment is great, they're less likely to do it. But if it comes out with a more negative report on September 5th, which is 2 days before the full moon, it should be interesting how all that plays out, because that would tie in into their possible rate hike or rate lowering, more likely, not rate hike. That would really kill the market. That's due in the third week of September. So that's another date to keep an eye out for.
Yes, the Carrington event happened September 1st and 2nd, 1959. It caused telegraph lines to start sparking and in some cases caused fires. And telegraphs were the only electronics back then. Can you imagine a similar coronal mass ejection now? Everything's electronic, including
really
your
amazing money.
Life.
I mean, nobody really, you know, we seem, our world is so limited to our daily mortal existence here in terms of our surroundings. And we are just on a planet, a little speck in the universe. And that's even more apparent when you go to an observatory like I do here about every night here in Flagstaff and look out at the universe and see how infinitesimal we really are. And, the power that exists outside of us and what could happen to the planet very quickly and the long situation unfolds. But you're right that the risk of listen, we get day to day we're dealing with natural forces on Earth. Right now there's about 45 active volcanoes on the planet, and every few days then Kilauea is active in Hawaii right now. A lot of stuff going on the planet itself, you know, so Mother Earth is not kind to us. Things could happen regardless of what happens on the sun. So it's always good to stay on top of things and be aware of your surroundings.
Mark, always fun chatting with you.
It is. Thanks for the update on Carrington. Thank you.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. You can find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.